From the Christian Research Institute in Charlotte, North Carolina, this is the Bible Answer Man broadcast with Hank Hanegraaff. We're on the air because truth matters. Life matters more. On today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man, we pick up where we ended on our previous broadcast and present more of an episode of the Hank Unplugged podcast. Hank is talking with Dr. Carrie Gress, author of The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. Let's now join Hank Hanegraaff and Carrie Gress in their conversation.
There's a great book by Daniel Horowitz that exposes the communist roots of Betty Friedan. She was very connected to this organization I already referred to, the Congress for American Women, which was, you know, disbanded by the House Committee for Un-American Activities back in 1949, I think, because it was such a piece of propaganda for the Soviets to really get in the minds of women. So she very much was at heart trying to get women to think like Marxists. So that the idea being a woman, if she is productive outside the home, that was the goal, to get all women outside the home, that the home was a form of slavery. And she refers to it as a comfortable concentration camp. And curiously, she was also hated Hitler. And yet this is the same piece that Hitler used, you know, at Auschwitz. You've got that sign that says at the gates, you know, Arbeit macht frei, work will make you free. And this is exactly the same ideology that she thinks she's using, that's different because it's from Stalin and the communists, but it's the same socialist concept of people being productive workers. And that's really what she was trying to get. But again, it's masterful because she uses that sense of victimhood so beautifully, of women, you know, this is a horrible place, you have to get out of it, you're really oppressed, this is terrible. And she also uses that sense of that fear of missing out that I think women are really taken by in so many respects. I mean, even Eve is taken by this, that, you know, what am I missing? What is God withholding when the serpent is tempting her? So these timeless ways in which women can be manipulated. And she just went full bore and the culture just absorbed it like crazy. And this is really how you can see this untethering of the woman from her children, from her home, from her husband. And this is at the heart of what has happened with abortion, that you can get a woman so far that she doesn't remember or doesn't know the beauty of that relationship. And instead, she can see it as actually an obstacle, because of course, it's an obstacle to that, what Friedan makes as if, you know, freedom from slavery, the workplace.
Friedan was also the founder of NOW, National Organization for Women. And that's unabashedly Marxist. And yeah, it's part of the inroad we now have for this ubiquitous idea of the oppressed and the oppressor. The oppressor being the patriarch, the oppressed being the family, the women and children. Yeah. That's now in the jet stream in our civilization.
Yes. And it comes from Friedan, but again, it also comes from Kate Millett, whom I mentioned earlier, also Angela Davis. And I think, you know, they were able to really get it in through the women's studies programs and the academies. And I think that if you did not have feminism and the success that they've had with feminism, not just in the academic world or through these books, but, you know, we have to be mindful that it's everywhere now. It's in Hollywood, it's in politics, it's in fashion magazines. You know, all of these places have the same, exact same messaging. That was all intentional. They very much wanted to get it into the culture in such a way that sort of creates this lock on the way that people think. But if those things had not been so successful with feminism, we never would have ended up with the woke ideology that we're dealing with now, where, you know, it's now just not men and women. It's now depends on what color you are, what your sexual orientation is. All of these things have taken on that exact same pattern of oppressed and oppressor. And that's really what the woke culture is trying to, you know, use to manipulate society. So yeah, it's absolutely all about power and control. And, you know, we've just continued to buy into it. And this is why they have power and control and the kind of influence that they have because of the success of feminism.
Yeah, you mentioned Kate Millett, and she was actually known as the female Marx.
She was, yeah. No, she was a force. I've gotten to know her sister. Kate died several years ago, and her sister Mallory is a devoted Christian. And she and I have spent a lot of time talking about Kate and hearing stories about her. And she's been sharing many of Kate's books with me, with a lot of the personal commentary that goes with it. And she was a deeply disturbed woman Kate was, you know, in and out of mental hospitals and really just, I think, did far more damage to the culture than we can ever even fathom because of what she did, both with feminism, but she also was very active in the notion of people with mental illness not being locked up, not being helped in institutions. And so this is one of the part of the reasons why there's so many homeless people with mental illness who are not being cared for. And because of this trend that Kate really kicked off with several of her books. She was also involved in Iran, in the revolution there. So anyway, it's amazing to dig into this woman's life and just see, you know, again, this woman who was so tragic, so mentally ill, and how her work is just everywhere now. Just this amazing how much of an influence she had for someone so relatively unknown in the world.
Yeah, so what is the connection between lesbianism and feminism? This relates to a section that you wrote with respect to Kate Millett.
Yeah, so this is, I think it's a great question because, you know, during the 60s and 70s, there was sort of this, you know, every lesbian was a feminist, not every feminist was a lesbian kind of understanding. But lesbianism really became this kind of pinnacle for all women, that this was their belief was that the lesbian lifestyle was the best lifestyle for women because you never had to answer to a man and you didn't have to worry about your fertility. So that was something that they was very actively pushed. And, you know, Kate was a prime example of this. She was married and then divorced and in and out of a string of every kind of relationship you can imagine. And she ended up, when she died, she was married to another woman. She had a heart attack in Paris. But yeah, so lesbianism was really pushed as just this very important social thing. And, you know, even had the calling of killing all men. I mean, this was, they were not shy about their beliefs about how awful men were and that men really just needed to be destroyed. And it's amazing to see, though, so many feminists that I've encountered, their life changes, especially when they have a son. You know, they suddenly have a transformation in their life because they don't know what to do with this little boy that they love so much, whom they've been trained to think of as the enemy. So yeah, there's all kinds of fissures and, you know, even just that basic question of how does a civilization reproduce itself without men, you know, seems to be not something that they're thinking much about because they're so focused on the ideology and trying to get men out of the picture in so many different ways.
I want to read something from your book. It was chilling. And you actually reproduce these unbelievable words that Kate Millett and her comrades chanted in Greenwich Village in the late 1960s. So here's what you wrote. Why are we here today? This is Millett and her comrades. We are here to make revolution. What kind of revolution? The cultural revolution. Shades of what happened in China. And how do we make the cultural revolution? By destroying the American family. How do we destroy the family? By destroying the American patriarch. And how do we destroy the American patriarch? By taking away his power. How do we do that? This is being chanted. By destroying monogamy. And how do we destroy monogamy? By promoting promiscuity, eroticism, prostitution, abortion, and homosexuality. All of this has been achieved. It was a dream back then, but all of that has been achieved to an extent that they couldn't have imagined when they were chanting it in Greenwich Village.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean, it's chilling when you really start putting this ungodly litany that they put together, putting that together and seeing what the context was in which they were saying that, you know, what the culture looked like and then what it looks like today. And yeah, it's just overwhelming. And I think it, in many respects, it provides us with a way back, actually, you know, that especially for men, you know, men, you don't need to engage in dialogue with this. What you need to do is promote monogamy. What you need to do is promote your family. What you need to do is, you know, be the best father and husband that you can be, because that's how we stave off these issues. But yeah, I think it's absolutely chilling how effective it has been and, you know, how they really have destroyed the family through these very awful things.
Maybe a few words about Herbert Marcuse. You know, he laid the groundwork for a lot of this, the groundwork for the New Left. He was at the forefront of critical race theory,
yeah,
which is just the racist part of critical theory.
Right.
Tell us a little more about him.
So Herbert Marcuse and Wilhelm Reich actually sort of worked together. They were both at the Frankfurt School that was at Columbia University here in the United States. They were both German and came over here. And, you know, even how that Frankfurt School was set up at Columbia University, I think, has left all kinds of people scratching their heads because it was very much a communist, you know, leftist organization. But they saw, you know, there were some real issues with the communist agenda and making it all about class. And so they realized, you know, we've got to stop talking about the worker and the proletariat and all of these, you know, classical Marxist concepts. How do we shift that into the culture? How do we change the culture entirely? Wilhelm Reich wrote and published his book in 1936 called The Sexual Revolution, which was really a blueprint for what became the sexual revolution in the United States. I think so many people, we have this impression that the sexual revolution was just sort of the spontaneous thing that happened. You know, it was just the fruit of the 60s and the Vietnam War and, you know, all of these things. Well, no, it was absolutely planned in order to happen at a later date.
Stay right there. We'll be back soon to rejoin Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Dr. Carrie Gress. Feminism doesn't empower women, it erases them. 50 years of radical feminism have solidified the primacy of the traditionally male sphere of life and devalued the attributes, virtues, and strengths of women. We can't even define woman. Carrie Gress, a wife, mother, and philosopher, punctures the myth of feminism, exposing its legacy of abuse, abandonment, and anarchy. Be sure to read The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us. To receive your copy, call 888-7000-CRI and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches. 888-7000-CRI. Or go online to equip.org. That's equip.org. Bertrand Russell famously said, "Most people would rather die than think, and many of them do." Not so with CRI support team members. Support team members are not only serious thinkers, but their membership in CRI's support team helps to equip hundreds of thousands of fellow believers around the globe each and every month. Are you not a member? Then you're missing out. Not only do support team members form the backbone of Christian Research Institute's outreaches, but they enjoy their selection of resources from our Equipping Essentials library. To discover how you can make a difference 24/7 in equipping believers at home and abroad to stand for life and truth, check out the benefits of membership at equip.org. Once again, that's equip.org.
If you're not horrified, you should be. Because the relentless assaults of wokeism on sanity and common sense have now reached a fevered pitch. In fact, some astute observers see more than deranged ideologies at work. It's as though the gates of hell have been opened. And alarmingly, the speed of this mindless rush to chaos and potential civilizational collapse is gaining momentum daily. That means Christians need to wake up and wake up fast. One of the best alarm clocks is the upcoming special Woke edition of the Christian Research Journal. It contains sobering articles with penetrating analyses of a social disease that is reaching a flashpoint. To receive your copy of this special edition of the Christian Research Journal, visit equip.org. That's equip.org. Or call 888-7000-CRI. That's 888-7000-CRI. For decades, Hank Hanegraaff has shared the truth of the historic Christian faith by answering questions over the radio, defending the faith through the written word, and preaching from pulpits around the globe. Today, he is ready to share his life in Christ, as detailed in his most profoundly personal piece of penmanship to date, Truth Matters, Life Matters More. Hank feels closer to Christ than ever before and wants you to learn from his experiences as recounted in Truth Matters, Life Matters More, so that you can join him on life's greatest journey, the journey toward union with God in Christ. To receive your copy of Truth Matters, Life Matters More, The Unexpected Beauty of an Authentic Christian Life, call 888-7000-CRI. and make a gift to support the Christian Research Institute's life-changing outreaches, 888-7000-CRI, or visit us at equip.org.
Here again are Hank Hanegraaff and his guest, Dr. Carrie Gress, as they continue their conversation.
So many people, we have this impression that the sexual revolution was just sort of the spontaneous thing that happened. You know, it was just the fruit of the 60s and the Vietnam War and, you know, all of these things. Well, no, it was absolutely planned in order to happen at a later date. And the 60s just, it took off. So it's sort of this chicken or the egg kind of thing. Like, I think a lot of people are beginning to realize that this was actually not just a spontaneous thing at all, but was really very much planned by Reich. And Marcuse was remarkable because of the fact that he just saw the cultural piece as being so important. And again, you've got Kate Millett and Angela Davis, who studied under both of them. And this idea that they had to get these pieces, not just, you know, and the political fringe, but into the minds of everyday people, much that, you know, the same way that Betty Friedan did, of how do we get this into the minds of women? So that's really, you know, the full import of what they have done. I think we're finally just figuring out. And again, you're right. If we didn't have critical theory, we wouldn't have had critical race theory. And it was all these concepts that have been used against us to really destroy the culture. And, you know, the big question being, well, what's the end result? Well, it's all about power for them. It's not, you know, a flourishing society with happy people. And it really is about just being in control. There's no sort of, you know, they have a utopia in mind, but they're not even sure how to articulate what that is. So it's incredibly sad to see how we have just bought on to this because of the fact that it was just infiltrated everything and we didn't know how to push back. We didn't know what was happening. And, you know, I think we've gotten to the point now where we know what's happening and it's great, you know, to finally see some pushback, but we just need to keep doing more and more of it and people realizing the ways in which they're being brainwashed by all of this.
Yeah, brainwashed, I mean, that's a good word. You know, if you advance all of the information on one side of a ledger and you repress all the information on the other side of the ledger, you don't have education, you really do have brainwashing. And I did a podcast with Yeonmi Park, and she was talking about this brainwashing that goes on at Columbia University, which is older than the country itself, and how Columbia University, an Ivy League school, is not teaching people how to think, but simply forcing people to regurgitate narratives. I mean, how important is it for people to learn to think again?
Yeah. No, and it's huge. I mean, it's really remarkable just how we are in this post-rational age. You know, even something like reading books. I mean, these are real challenges. I know it was for me at a certain point when I'd actually finished college and I went into graduate school and I thought, you know, I don't even know how to read a book well. I'm too distracted. I don't know how to focus properly. And I just forced myself to do it. But I think that most of us have so much going on, you know, just even in our daily lives and so many different kinds of distractions that sitting down with a book and being able to actually absorb the argument and really think through it is a challenge for most of us. So yeah, there's so much work that needs to be done. But the first one just needs to be showing people how, you know, expansive these concepts are and how much they have taken over. Not just Columbia, but almost all of academia has absorbed this kind of narrative telling attitude about the world for sure.
We're just talking about the influence of Marcuse, and that influence is now being felt in drag queen story hours, the aggressive sexual education of small children, and the horrors of wokeism in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that that's an important piece of it too, is just this recognition of how important getting rid of sexual innocence, getting rid of monogamy, all of these things really are so vital to the left's effort, because you create broken people then who don't know, you know, it's very hard to form a family. It's very hard to resist tyranny, you know, all of these kinds of things. It just feeds into it. The more broken we become, the more control that they have.
I want your perspective on the pill. It's been an ecological disaster on many different levels, but it's been a disaster far beyond ecology.
Yeah. No, I think that's a great question. I think that's one of the hard things, is it's very hard to talk about it because it feels like people have embraced it so much that they don't know the ecological damage that, you know, what it's doing to fish and rivers and things like that, because it's kind of become taboo. But yeah, I think it's created so many of the problems that we have, again, because it's trying to erase the fertility of a woman and make her like a man. And so it just, you know, completely eradicates even something as basic as communication between a man and a woman, a husband and wife, you know, and that kind of trust that happens. And that's one of the beauties of a woman's fertility, is it was something she had to protect. And she had to protect herself because of that, because of the vulnerability that's associated with it. And so when you add something like the pill, that, you know, the whole dynamic changes, and suddenly, you know, the hookup culture is a realization, is something that can come about, because a woman doesn't really have to be so concerned the way that she would have been before. Not realizing, of course, that, you know, not only is her fertility at stake, it's also her emotions, her life, the decisions that she's making, you know, all of these relationships happening that we know statistically and just from psychology damage women much more on an emotional level than they do men. So that's, I think, the real tragedy, is just women feeling like, you know, the hookup culture is really the only way forward in terms of forming relationships, because otherwise you can't even start a relationship with someone unless that's how it starts, because of just the expectations that have come about in the culture that, you know, sexuality has become just kind of a contact sport instead of something much deeper that's meant to bond a couple, both, you know, through hormones and biologically, but also through children.
We mentioned abortion earlier. I want you to elaborate on the transition we've gone through in our culture from saying abortion should be legal, they should be rare, they should be safe, to now we're actually having abortion showers.
Yeah. Oh, it's so sickening. Yeah. I mean, for years, that was really the mantra. I mean, you probably remember Bill Clinton talking about that, legal, safe, and rare was something that came out of his mouth certainly more than once. But no, there's been this real cultural shift where I think, you know, enough celebrities have had abortions and have, you know, talked about them at award ceremonies and how if they hadn't had that abortion, their life would have been ruined and they wouldn't have gotten this Grammy or whatever. They've tried to culturally make it an attractive and good thing, really just changing the values of it instead of really seeing it as a tragedy. And yeah, it's incredible the campaigns that are available now, the Shout Your Abortion campaign, which was like $1 million to sort of promote this. You know, there's in my book, I mentioned this one woman who talks about, you know, if she ever had an abortion, she would have a party after it that had like baby shaped cakes. And I mean, just horrifying things, like, you know, you can't believe that somebody has gotten to this point of thinking that an abortion is actually a good thing. So yeah, that's another one of those great places where you can just see how deep the brainwashing has become if you can actually turn abortion into something that needs to be celebrated.
I suppose that's related to the second part of your book where you talk about the mean girls, the emergence of this breed of women.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So the mean girls is, you know, the section of my book after the lost girls, what happens is you've got the mean girls, and these are the ones that are in power. A lot of them we know by just one name, you know, their family name has been dropped. We just know immediately who they are by saying their first name. And they have really controlled, you know, through their different empires. Look at someone like Oprah, or look at certainly Gloria Steinem is one of them, you know, Nancy Pelosi, Hillary Clinton, all across the spectrum, whether they're celebrities or political people. They're very much about controlling the narrative. And they're mean because, of course, they want to make sure that nobody else threatens their little empire. And, you know, we see this meanness. All you have to do is watch The View, you know, where you always, every episode, I'd be amazed if they ever an episode where the women on the left always outnumber the women on the right. The conservatives are usually one or two, and their voices are shouted down by the much more outspoken women on the left often. So it's just amazing how, you know, these women have used power and manipulation and, you know, all of these different efforts to maintain their own narrative. And so, yeah, the mean girls are alive and well, for sure.
Second wave feminism, they were masters at exploiting the use of the media, particularly television. And Phil Donahue was a facilitator of all of this, and Hugh Hefner. Elaborate.
Yeah. So this was one of the interesting things to look into, was just the role that both advertising played, but also, you know, television was new and you had someone like Gloria Steinem, who's incredibly attractive and people just wanted to have her on their show. She was articulate. She had this new magazine called Ms. And so it's amazing to see how they used magazines and women's magazines, which have obviously predated any of the second wave feminism, but all of those sort of turned into avenues for reaching women with their narrative. And yeah, I think it's really incredible. In fact, there's all these crazy stories about Betty Friedan actually just being a complete tyrant. There was one show that she told the producer that if they didn't give her way about something, she was going to say this bad word 11 times live on air if they didn't give her what she wanted. I just did Dennis Prager's show, and he said that when he was 28 years old, he did a debate with her. At one point, she got so upset with him, she called him a male chauvinist piglet, and she walked out. Yeah, he said, I don't know why I got called a piglet, probably because he was just 28, but she walked off the stage. And, you know, I was like, what did you do next? You know, I just assumed the debate was over. He said, I just kept talking. And she eventually came back and finished the debate. But, you know, it was kind of the first time that I had heard someone actually like not let her tantrum win. You know, he figured out the way, just keep talking and moving forward and ignore the tantrum. And she came back and, you know, they finished the debate. And, you know, what I would give to see that debate now. But yeah, it was those kinds of things that, you know, again, these mean girl tactics to get their way.
We'll have to stop here for today's special edition of the Bible Answer Man broadcast. Join us again next time when we'll continue Hank Hanegraaff's conversation with Dr. Carrie Gress. Our firm commitment here at the Christian Research Institute is to defend the faith once for all delivered to the saints and equip believers to become true disciples of Jesus Christ. In appreciation for your vital gift to help strengthen and expand CRI's mind-shaping, life-changing outreaches, Hank would like to send you a copy of The End of Woman, How Smashing the Patriarchy Has Destroyed Us by Carrie Gress. Call a resource consultant at 888-7000-CRI, 888-7000-CRI, or visit our website, equip.org. That's equip.org. You can also write CRI at Post Office Box 8500, Charlotte, North Carolina, zip code 28271. The Bible Answer Man broadcast is funded by listeners like you. We're on the air because truth matters, life matters more. Anyone who's been paying attention knows there's a war going on, not just on traditional morality, civility, and decency, but even more fundamentally on historic notions of truth. And the enemy isn't just the onslaught of fake news facilitated by a post-truth culture and turbocharged by growing legions of ideological spin doctors. No, the real enemies of truth range from postmodernist convictions that there is no objective truth to militant scientism that claims that only science can determine truth, and religion is little more than primitive superstitions. But CRI support team members are not waving a white flag of surrender. They're holding the fort by undergirding every one of Christian Research Institute's mind-shaping and life-changing outreaches 24/7. To learn how you can make a difference and enjoy all the benefits of support team membership, simply visit equip.org.